I'm a bit of a perfectionist. Actually, I'm very much of a perfectionist. I don't want other people to be perfectionists, but I do want for myself. And one of the things I forgot to do last Sunday, because I was sick with allergies, and really, I didn't think I did terribly well, but the worst thing of all is that I did not thank you, Rick, for coming to my rescue and being service leader last Sunday. So thank you so very much for doing that, and if you had other obligations that day, thank you again for putting those aside. Now, some of you who were here may remember that I had been called out by Unitarian Universalist colleagues regarding the word woke. They had told me that even speaking about wokeness as a white person was inappropriate and racist. And I thanked them for their comments, and I appreciated them. But that said, I really don't think words ought to be held hostage. Now, we all know that words have multiple meanings. They don't have just one meaning. For example, the word privilege, which I hear a lot in the Unitarian Universalist ministers circles that I still am involved with, privilege is apparently a bad thing. And I look at it as, yes, it can be bad if you're using privilege to just hold on to everything for yourself and for no one else. But privilege is also a sense of being able to give back to the world what you have received and, if you will, pass it on. So I don't see it as just one version or the other, and I think that may get us into trouble sometimes. I would not, however, want to use a word like woke, that is from American Black American English, in any way that would be disrespectful. So I won't use it. However, I think the definition that we heard this morning in the opening words adequately explains what woke means to Black Americans. Now, of course, as we all know, that word is being used as a derogatory slur by people who want to turn a perfectly appropriate and focused word into something really nasty. And I won't mention Florida, but if I was going to mention Florida, I'd mention the governor. But I'm not going to go there. But the word to me is another way of saying awareness, awakening, aha. Now, if you want to have a deeper and authentic waking understanding of woke, I would suggest that you invite a Black American to come and speak on that specific topic, because they will know a lot more about it authentically than I ever could. But as I said, I'm going to use a similar word that arises from my life experience and my learning over many years of spiritual practice. Awaken or aware. So how does this word awaken fit the topic today about the aha experiences that change us? Well, I'm going to make another change. The word epiphany. Because epiphany and awakening and awake, to me, all are variations of the same understanding or visceral understanding of, oh, now I understand, whatever it might be. Now, one famous story of an epiphany is that of Bill Wilson, who was a co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. The story happens in the 1950s before LSD was made illegal. And this has a little bit of a backstory to it. Some 20 years earlier in Towns Hospital in New York City, Bill Wilson had discovered the insight that became Alcoholics Anonymous as a spiritual awakening. Now, at the time, he was deeply into alcoholism. He was probably dying if he had gone much longer. And I recognize that because I was in a similar situation 20 years ago. And he prayed in his hospital bed, you know, show me something. And he had that spiritual awakening of an experience of white light, a sound of rushing wind, and a feeling of deep peace. And that fascinated him in later days, especially as he was trying to work with other people who were alcoholics and could not seem to move away from the craving for whatever the next drink might be. So in the 1950s, he decided it would be an interesting idea to try LSD a few times within a structured location with clinical trials and see if he could reclaim that experience that he'd had so many years before. So on that day in, I think, 1954, he was with a doctor and several other people, and he finally recaptured that experience that he had 30 years before. He said later that his doors of perception cleared, colors were more intense, the voice of the doctor reverberated with new resilience, all motion flowed with beauty, and above all, he said, he comprehended the essential all rightness of the universe, the reconciliation of opposites. And later in that therapy session, the person who was keeping notes said that he looked around and he said, people take life way too seriously. And that was part of his insights. Now, that kind of insight or epiphany or awareness is the type that will grab us by the heart and fill it up with love. Because that's what happened to him not only that day in the 1930s, but also in the 1950s. But let's face it, we sometimes think that epiphany has to be this big, incredible, life-changing situation like Saul on the road to Damascus when he had this incredible vision or insight that changed him. It doesn't have to be that, although that could be fun, I suppose. An epiphany does not have to be a blinding flash of light or even the voice of God speaking to us. Rich Chafee, some months ago, spoke here in the fall about a personal epiphany he had earlier in his life involving hunting. You can ask him later about it, and he and Corinne are sitting back there, yes, and he might be willing to share with you some of the details, but it was a very powerful moment. His telling was that he'd finished basic training in the service, and he went home to relax and to hunt, which was a habit of his. And so he went out hunting, and a rabbit ran by, and out of reflex, he shot the rabbit. And the epiphany he had in that moment changed his life. And so if you ask him about it, I'm sure he'd be happy to tell you during social hour. I've had a number of such epiphany moments in my life. I still remember living on the farm in Maine, and I was sitting on a stone wall behind the house, and I was probably 4 or 5 years old. And like any little kid, I was, sitting on a stone wall, and I was waving my legs back and forth, just taking in the world. It was quiet, and it was peaceful, and I was alone, and it was blissful. And then all of a sudden, for a moment that went on forever, I felt and heard a hum around me and inside me, and I felt the universe go through me, and I go through it. And all these years later, I still remember it vividly. And yes, it changed my life in ways that I still don't understand, but it was a powerful moment for a little kid of 4 or 5 years old to have such an experience. And having that experience made my life change, even though I didn't know it until years later. And I think basically many of us have such experiences, and we may not pay attention to them because, well, they're not the big epiphanies that really change our world and, are a flash of light or something, and they're just small things that become aha moments that without preparing for it, because most of them we're not ready for, And when we experience them, it's like, oh, wow, I never imagined. So here are a couple of examples. Some of us had a book discussion group that we had this winter. The book we used was Breakfast Epiphanies, Finding Wonder in the Everyday by David Anderson. Now, I am going to say right here, right now, it is not our David Anderson here at the church. This other David Anderson is an Episcopalian minister who served a church in Pennsylvania and later one in Connecticut. Now, if our David Anderson happens to have an alter ego, then that might explain it, but probably not. His book was published by the Unitarian Universalist Publishing House in 2002, Beacon Press. So he tells us in the introduction, he says, I hope you enjoy these stories. And they're all short stories, they're short chapters. And he says, I hope they suggest a new way of seeing the world that uncovers transcendence. And I'm going to use the word of becoming aware. In other words, he says, aha moments of awakening, they don't have to be the big things like Yahweh speaking out of the bush to Moses, commanding him to save his people. They are moments where God or your divine voice or your intuition or your Buddha nature, whatever, holds up a mirror and says, what do you see? What do you see? What do you see? And then we are invited to look for ourselves and our relationships, especially with others, to deepen our awareness and our connections. Because as I've said many times before, the word spirituality is tricky for some people, but I just put it down to relationships. Relationships with you, relationships with the world, relationships with the earth itself. It doesn't matter. But spirituality to me is relationship. And so is awakening and aha moments. So here's a summary of that first chapter in his book. He and his wife live with their two teenage daughters. And he writes at the beginning of the chapter that this morning our family of four had cereal and bile for breakfast. And then he goes on. This is typically random order of family feuds was the menu. Who had not changed the kitty litter? Who had not cleaned her room? Who had not practiced the piano? Who had not participated happily in the family yard work project? And of course, whose attitude stunk? Now that's only actually what my wife and I were serving on our side of the table. On the other side, our 13 and 15-year-old daughters were slinging a mean hash of their own. Who could not stop harassing innocent children? Who always favored the other child? And definitely, who needed serious therapy for dirty laundry fixation? And it just went downhill from there. And finally, the daughters got up. They got ready for school, and they walked out the door, and their parents had always, you know, kissed them goodbye and said, have a good day, and so on, and that didn't happen. They slammed the door behind them, and that was that. And so David Anderson at that point says, well, maybe I have to think about this a bit, because he realized that he might be just a bit too fervent in his ideas that his daughters had to be obedient, they had to be happy no matter what, et cetera, et cetera. And his wife said, well, you know, maybe we have to be good examples. We're gone all the time. How can we be a family and be connected if we're apart so much? And then Reverend Anderson feels very, very, what would the word be? Oh, a martyr. Because he felt that everybody was blaming him. And so he said, fine, I'll be bad. Or, you know, whatever it was he was going to say. He said, fine, we'll do nothing. Have it your way, to his wife. And then he walks out the door. I don't think he slams the door like his daughters did, but he walked out to go over to church and be a minister. So he's over at church and he realizes, you know, there's an issue here. And part of the issue was he realized that he wasn't being a very good parent. He realized that he was looking at his daughters as, well, they should be grown-ups. They should be doing everything the way we do things. And he realized, no, that's not the case. And the problem is partly his own. So he decided to go home early and greet his daughters at the door. And he says, it takes inner adult-style maturity to look within ourselves and ask, how am I contributing to this problem in our families and our communities? We live more and more in a culture of spiritual immaturity that teaches us to say, we have a problem and you must change. So he went home from work, and he says, I met them at the door and reclaimed the morning's lost kiss and said, sorry about breakfast. My 15-year-old tucked the apology into her pocket and said with a smile, don't worry about it, Dad. You're so obnoxious, we don't even listen to you anymore. My heart leapt up. Everything was back to normal. Was that an epiphany? Well, actually, in the book group, we had a long conversation about that. I'm not sure if we ever, did we ever reach a solution about that chapter that there was, in fact, an epiphany? Does anybody remember? I don't. Now, there were several possibilities. Was it Reverend Anderson's aha moment that he had to set a good example for his family? Could be. Or did he have to be less judgmental of his teenage daughters? Or, frankly, maybe the reality was that he was obnoxious anyway and might as well stop worrying about it all. Now, again, I don't know if we ever reached a conclusion. Maybe Rich will know the answer, but maybe not. And a number of you were in the book discussion group. Raise your hands if you were in the book discussion group. I see quite a few of you. So feel welcome, any of you who do not know this story, to go up to these people and say, was there an epiphany or not? And then that's a good conversation point. But the point here is that epiphanies are every day around us. But we have to look and experience and see and hear those moments that usually, without any expectations, come upon us and tap us on the shoulder and say, hey, it's time to learn something. Back to the word woke for a second. The word woke, of course, is now all over the society. It's certainly on social media, certainly in the news, certainly part of being slung back and forth as a positive, a negative, a neutral, whatever. And last week, I started wondering, is it possible for not just one person to have an aha moment in our lives, because I think we have them a great deal, is it possible for an entire society to have an aha moment that goes on and on and on? And I mentioned last week about something as benign, I suppose, as people stop smoking cigarettes in churches and on planes. Well, part of it was you're not supposed to do it anymore. But within my lifetime, certainly, that has gone from a very common, everyday, everybody does it, to, well, I don't see anybody smoking in church anymore, nor in the other building. Things changed. Awareness changed. Yes, sometimes there was punishment if you did that, but awareness changed, and somehow in the course of our lives, no, there are plenty of people who still smoke. Okay, but so many others don't, and we have a set of rules now about you cannot do this in these spaces. I'll also mention seatbelts. I grew up next to the one state that refused to have seatbelt laws, New Hampshire, live free or die, and they refused to take any highway funds because they did not want to order people to wear seatbelts. Well, they finally gave up on it. And now, of course, there were punishments if you didn't do it. People generally wear seatbelts. And you can go on and on and on to things that have changed in our lifetimes that 50 or 60 or 70 years ago we would have just taken totally for granted. And I still wonder, is it possible that a whole society is becoming more aware? I think that 9/11 was a shocking moment and forced us to be aware of the world beyond our shores. Is it possible that the national fuss about the meaning and use of woke is forcing us subtly, and sometimes not, is forcing us to understand in a more feeling, heart way of what Black Americans go through every single day than intellectually in our heads saying, oh yeah, I know what woke means, because we don't. Is the possibility that the visceral feeling, not thinking, but feeling of that word over time migrates over to all of us as Americans, and it becomes a moment, an aha moment of course, how could we have thought or felt otherwise? Awareness, awakening, aha moment. This is how people feel. This is the life they lead. Is it appropriate? Is it honorable? Is it civilized? Is it caring? Is it loving? And if it isn't, then we need to correct it together as a community. I'd like to take a few moments for you to think of an epiphany or aha moment in your life that, without planning it, without knowing it, somehow changed your life from one direction to another. For me, one of them was when I was 4 or 5 years old. For you, I don't know what it was, but you've probably had more than one, and you've probably realized afterwards what a powerful impact some simple gesture or look or meeting someone or a job or whatever it might have been changed you and put the pieces together just a bit more for you to be wise and mature and loving. So let's take a couple moments just to have some quiet and think about what on earth we've had in our lives that have made our lives, for the most part, better between one moment and the next. I'll ring the bell in a little bit.